deadlocked. In D.C., in Wisconsin, everywhere you look, nothing but deadlock in this nation. Maybe that's why we're having so much trouble either or getting off the pot. Hey, welcome to the Big Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman here once again tonight, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Once again, drafted into duty to be your broadcast media tonight, broadcasting live from the left coast in beautiful downtown Burbank, while the Malloys are off, out, and about enjoying a well-deserved spring break all week long. So you got me, and I hope that's okay. I got you, babe. Glad you can join us tonight. It will, of course, be another big show. Oh boy, where do we start? Okay, well, more business here. Bradblog.com chat room is now open, and it's already hopping over there as people are filing in with your lovely hostess tonight. Dez is in the room, and I think 4Earth will be joining us over there shortly. Jump over there and say hello, and start a big fight. That's always fun for me to watch. Let's see, what else? You can get my attention throughout the night, maybe on the Twitters. I am the Brad Blog over there if you want to follow or send me a message. Love notes, hate mail, whatever you got in 140 characters or less. Okay, well, if you heard last night's show, it kind of ended in a cliffhanger, didn't it? We were following Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Supreme Court election all night long with John Nichols and Howie Klein, and we were keeping our eye on the results as they were coming in, the reported results as they were coming in. And, well, it looked like it was going to be a close election. Turns out it was! Out of 1.5 million ballots cast yesterday in a Wisconsin Supreme Court election, one that nobody cares about these Supreme Court elections, these, you know, off-year whatever elections. Man, was that not the case last night in Wisconsin. 1.5 million ballots cast, and right now the margin between the two candidates, 204 votes. Yep. Let's see. Joanne Kloppenburg, the assistant attorney general, received 740,090 votes. And Justice David Prosser, he's the incumbent there. Justice David Prosser received 739,886 votes. Yeah. 204 votes currently separate the two candidates according to the voting machines, the tabulating machines, the op-scan machines, the computers that counted the votes, the paper ballots. Most of them are paper ballots, and that's the good news. I'll get to the bad news in a moment. We will, of course, be talking about Wisconsin tonight. Those of you who are familiar with me and my work over at bradblog.com, of course, when it comes to elections and election integrity, that am our middle name. So we're obviously watching Wisconsin quite closely here, and we're going to be talking about it a bit in this hour. You can reach us throughout the night at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Call that number, not the Malloy number, because they won't answer. They're out having fun. Let's see. What other business? Okay, coming up on the show tonight, Eric Bullard will be joining us a little bit later. As it turns out, Glenn Beck, he got fired today or something, or he quit, or, well, they just didn't renew his contract. We'll find out what the real story is behind all of that with Eric Bullard of Media Matters for America. The folks who watchdog the liars, pimps, and scoundrels over there at Fox News. And I bet Eric's in a good mood today. Or maybe he isn't. Because, you know, Beck is just leaving Fox News. He ain't leaving the country. He's still going to be around. I suspect he's still going to have his 3 hours of radio a day. And he may even be opening up his own TV network, for all we know. Man with an ego that size needs his own network, it seems to me. Also joining us in this hour, legendary Florida election supervisor. You don't hear that much. Legendary director of Florida elections in Leon County, Ion Sancho, will be joining us. I can't wait. Always love talking with Ion. Again, an American hero, this guy. He was put in charge, so trusted by all sides is he, that he was entrusted with overseeing the 2000 election recount in the state of Florida. He's the election supervisor in Leon County, Florida's capital. He, as far as I'm concerned, is a great election integrity hero. There is, sadly, a huge new election law bill going through the Florida Congress now. And it's got a lot of troubling elements, elements that Ion has gone on record calling a travesty. He's going to be talking to us in the in this hour, a little bit later, about that. And because I was, you know, I was reminded watching Wisconsin, when you're down to 204 votes separating the two candidates here, how important every damn vote is. How important it is that everyone who wants to vote, who is legally allowed to vote, is actually allowed to vote, and then that their vote is actually counted and then counted accurately. Yeah, those are the hoops that need to be jumped through in a democracy, and they are hoops that, unfortunately, a lot of Republicans these days are interested in not jumping through at all. As a matter of fact, they're interested in closing them off entirely, as they are trying to do again down there in Florida. All right, well, let's talk Wisconsin here. So we've got this race that turned into, 6 weeks ago, David Prosser, Justice David Prosser, was, you know, a shoo-in for this. He was going to win. It was not even a contest. It was not on anybody's radar until all hell started breaking loose. Thanks, Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin. Nice job. When he started with his union stripping bills, and the GOP state legislature there started pushing through, pulling all sorts of tricks to try to push this bill through despite protests, hundreds of thousands of Americans, Wisconsinites, Wisconsiners, Wisconsinans. I got to figure that out. Showing up at the state capitol night and day and not leaving. And that's the important thing. They showed up, they protested, and they did not leave. When you leave, they can ignore you. When you stay, it's a hell of a lot harder. And so they stayed, and yet the Republicans pulled all kinds of tricks, and somehow they were able to strip off this union-busting part of the bill and pass it separately. They did so without the 24-hour notice for an open meeting that they are supposed to constitutionally. At least that is what the Democrats are charging. And a court in Wisconsin, as you likely know, has put that bill on hold right now, pending a trial over this matter. Well, this could get to the Supreme Court, and that makes the Supreme Court very, very important at this point in Wisconsin, where you've got a 4-3 majority for the Republicans. We'll call them Republicans. It's supposed to be nonpartisan, but 4-3 Republicans. Justice David Prosser is one of them, and he's a huge supporter of Scott Walker and the Republicans, and has said he will facilitate their agenda. Meanwhile, you've got Joanne Kloppenburg, who has said she believes in an independent judiciary and that the rule of law should be the final say-so. And so this has become a proxy battle. The folks on the right supporting Walker, the so-called Tea Party, whoever they are, have gotten behind Prosser. They've been supporting him, putting in millions of dollars on one side. And on the other side, you got big labor. You got the unions and, frankly, the people supporting Joanne Kloppenburg. Well, at least half the people, 50% of the people, because this race that was supposed to go gangbusters for Prosser just 6 weeks ago has turned into a proxy battle for this entire fight in Wisconsin. And right now, 50-50, according to the voting machines. But there are some questions about that, some questions about those voting machines, some appropriate questions, and this thing is clearly headed for a recount. I can only hope it is a hand recount, not solely a machine recount, but I'll give you some idea how that recount will work if it occurs, and I think it's likely to occur, despite the fact that Joanne Kloppenburg declared victory today, somewhat optimistically. You know, that's what these guys do when they win, when they think they win on election night by even a few hundred votes, apparently, out of 1.5 million. So don't count any chickens yet there, Kloppenburg or Prosser. This thing is going to take a while. We'll explain exactly how this is going to proceed or what directions we're headed or what the concerns are when we come back. You're listening to a big, big, big Mike Malloy show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in all night. Stay with us. You won't want to miss a second. It's trying, democracy. Oh, it's out there. It's trying to get here. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Okay, we're talking about, we'll be joined, by the way, in the next part of the hour with Ion Sancho. You will not want to miss that. Leon County's Supervisor of Elections. This guy, he's the real deal. You'll see. Anyway, okay, so we're talking about the Wisconsin election. We've got 1.5 million votes cast. Currently, the margin between Kloppenburg, who has declared victory prematurely, and Justice David Prosser, who has not conceded, good for him, is 204 votes. Now, we've got good news and bad news, at least for election integrity advocates. Let's start with the good news. Most of the ballots cast yesterday in Wisconsin across the state in the statewide election are paper ballots, hand-marked paper ballots, almost all of them. All right, that's the good news. So there is a verifiable hand-marked paper ballot that can be counted now in a recount if anybody bothers to do one, which I suspect they will. And in that, and presuming the chain of custody has been secure for these ballots, then we can get a pretty good idea, an exact idea, frankly, because hand-counting, hand-marked paper ballots is, in fact, the gold standard for democracy. If we did it at the ballots, at the, at the polling place on election night, the chain of custody would not be the same kind of an issue that it will be now. But let's presume and hope that the chain of custody is secure, because they didn't count them at the ballots, at the polling place, on election night, as they should, before those ballots move anywhere. So they'll be counted centrally, back at election headquarters at the county, most likely. Or they'll be moved to Madison. I'm not sure exactly where they're going to count them, if they count them. All right. Well, the bad news, however, is that the ballots up till now have been counted by the easy-manipulated and oft-failed computer, OpScan computers, made by Diebold, made by ESNS, Sequoia, and Populex, all of whose machines have been hacked, are easy to flip, all the rest. They're easy to flip, even with paper ballots, if you don't bother to count the paper ballots, as we normally don't do. Running them through the computer doesn't matter. And if you don't believe me, you can go over to bradblog.com tonight. You can read our article on this that Ernie Canning and I wrote today. We've got a clip from Hacking Democracy, the HBO, 2006 HBO film that shows exactly how you can flip an election using, in this case, it was a Diebold optical scan machine in such a way that no one will ever know unless they actually bother to count the ballots. Now, there were some touchscreen votes cast, some 100% unverifiable votes cast, but very few. They have the touchscreen systems there usually for disabled people to use voluntarily if they like. Those are 100% unverifiable. But that's okay, right? Because we've got mostly paper ballots. Well, no, not right. If the margin is this close after all of the paper ballots are hand counted by actual human beings, if the margin is this close that there are more votes cast on touchscreen machines, or as we call them, DREs, direct recording electronic machines, then there will, in truth, be no way to know whether the results are accurate. And that is the problem with using these type of 100% unverifiable voting machines. There may have been more votes than just the few that are usually cast by disabled voters because they ran out of paper ballots in some precincts. And there are reports that I've yet to be able to confirm that, in fact, they were pushing folks towards the touchscreen machines when they ran out of paper ballots to use those. So if anybody out there in Madison has any idea what the numbers are, I have not yet been able to find them today. As far as how many votes were cast on touchscreen systems, that could end up making a difference depending on which direction this thing may go. Ernie Canning quoted a report out of Michigan a few years ago on the ESNS M100 scanners that are used that found that they reported inconsistent vote totals. Even when the same ballots were run through the same machines, they yielded different results each time. That's what you're dealing with OpScan machines. All right. Ion Sancho of Florida. Next, stay with us.
What is wrong? And the evidence is clear. I'm not alone. There are thousands of us here. This is my democracy. You won't go telling me my vote don't matter anymore.
No, you won't.
And is not worth fighting for.
You're damn right. We will fight for your democracy. Brad Friedman here, bradblog.com. In for Mike Malloy today. We'll be joined momentarily by Ion Sancho down in Florida. I wanted to make one more point here about the Wisconsin recount that is likely to happen in the Supreme Court election. And by the way, if you do want to talk about that or anything else, we will get to your calls in the next hour, I promise. Maybe even this hour, if you want to try to get in, if you don't mind waiting. 877-520-1150 is our number. Okay, let's see. A couple of points. I mentioned how inaccurate these OpScan systems can be and how, in fact, my next guest, Ion Sancho, knows this for a fact, as you can see him in HBO's documentary Hacking Democracy. We've got a clip on bradblog.com today in our article on Wisconsin showing exactly how these OpScan systems can be flipped so that unless you bother to actually count the paper ballots, you have no idea who actually won the race. And those are the systems they use in Wisconsin, made by Diebold. As a matter of fact, the same Diebold AccuVote OS is used in parts of Wisconsin, as are systems by ESNS, Sequoia, and so forth. Okay, this is according to the Wisconsin Recount Procedures Manual that I began to go through today. Interesting process they have for recount. They say, quote, ballots may not be counted. I'm sorry, ballots may not be hand-counted without a court order, as per a Wisconsin statute, 5.90, Section 2. All right, so you need a court order in order to hand-count the ballots. Otherwise, you have to use the optical scanner. However, later in the procedures, it also says each ballot shall be reviewed by the Board of Canvassers and may be inspected by the candidates or their representatives before being fed into the machine. So I read that as a virtual hand count. If they're able to examine the ballot and see, you know, who it's a vote for before they put it into the machine, And then they can make sure that the machine is counting it accurately. Strange rules, but them's the rules currently in Wisconsin. Okay. All right. I am joined, I'm sure, a man who has many opinions on this and on recounts, seeing as how he oversaw the 2000 presidential recount down in Florida. Leon County's legendary, as far as I'm concerned, election independent supervisor of elections, Ion Sancho, now joins us. That, by the way, is an elected position in Florida. Being a supervisor of elections, and he has been a longtime hero of mine and back in the news again over the last week because, what do you know, Florida is trying to do it again, trying to change the election laws again, I would argue, to make it harder to vote. We'll see what Ion has to say. Hey, Ion, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Good afternoon or evening, depending upon where you are, Brad.
Yeah, out here it's afternoon. So thank you, sir. Okay, Ion, well, you're causing trouble in Florida again. You're in the news calling bills that these nice Republican legislators are trying to pass to make it to make elections more fair, more clean, more reliable. And yet you call this new law a travesty. Ion, what's going on in Florida now? What are they trying to pull now?
Well, they're trying to make it harder for people to vote just in time for the 2012 presidential election cycle.
Surprise, surprise.
You know, when you think that they would have learned that this is not really a winning issue because Americans actually do want to have their votes counted.
You think? Do they?
Well, I think they do when they vote. Now, we didn't have any kind of a turnout in the 2010 election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
There was depressed turnouts everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that had an impact on the results across the country.
So the GOP came in last week with a bill that now has a lot of stuff that Charlie Crist, the previous Republican governor, had vowed to veto. So they didn't try it back when Crist was there, but now they're trying it now that you got this new crazy governor in charge, Scott. They're all named Scott. Go figure. What is in this bill that started, I think, as a 14-page bill and then just blew up from there over the last few days?
Well, yes. We had our Association of Supervisors of Elections up here to lobby last week. And Wednesday, when we were briefed by the bill, it was basically an 18-page bill. And then within 48 hours, it was, when we had its first hearing, it was 282 pages. With no staff analysis made available.
282, so they had to have this in a desk drawer or something.
Absolutely what they did. It's a very common practice now under the Republican rules to essentially use bills for what they call shell packages. They'll just essentially have an amendment which strikes everything after the enacting clause and something that has been pre-written or been prepared for weeks or months in advance, then gets placed in. And they do this to avoid criticism by introducing controversial measures early on the process. They wait till the last second to do this. For example, one of the proposals that we anticipate now, since they tipped their hand last week, is that the Republicans will propose cutting early voting in the state of Florida by 50% of its time, reducing it from 2 weeks to 1 week. And that's basically to make the lines even longer than they were 4 years ago.
Yeah, because I remember in 2008, that was a big issue. There was huge lines, huge bottlenecks for the early voting in Florida. And Governor Crist, I think, was it executive order? He expanded those hours during that two-week period?
And properly so, because individuals were waiting in hours in the baking sun to vote.
Right.
And he extended them 2 hours statewide. And while that was administrative headache to me, it absolutely infuriated the Republican Party, who does not see early voting, which, quite frankly, we need because our infrastructure is overtaxed already. We need early voting to handle all of the citizens in a timely manner. Otherwise, you end up with those 2004 pictures from Ohio.
Yes, with the lines going around the corner. And they were going around the corner even in the early voting in Florida. I suspect they're going to, the Republicans are going to claim, oh, we have to cut it in half for cost-cutting purposes, right? Is that the excuse they're going to give, Ion?
Well, I think that's what they're going to propose. But the issue is that it's been the most popular voting innovation mm-hmm. in the last quarter century in the state of Florida. Citizens like early voting. Early voting really means that a higher percentage of their votes are going to be counted. And if there are any problems that emerge, it's done in front of the election so they can be solved as opposed to waiting till election day. So early voting is just tremendously popular all across the state. And I just don't think they can get by with this. Although I will tell you that here's a thank goodness that I'm a citizen, and the citizens of the state of Florida are also citizens of the United States government, because this kind of an
for now, Ion.
Well, I'm a big believer in the 14th Amendment,
right?
Because the 14th Amendment is what applied all of the Bill of Rights to the states and prevented state tyranny against American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think while we all praise the Bill of Rights, the 14th Amendment, which is the amendment that occurred because we determined we would be one nation indivisible, the 14th Amendment is the amendment that truly guarantees liberty and justice for all.
So you think that the 14th Amendment, that some of these things they may be trying to do are going to be found unconstitutional, perhaps? Well, actually, let's go through, Ion, a couple more of these things. This is the one that, there's a couple of them that really trouble me. In Florida, the Secretary of State is not elected. It's an appointed position, appointed by the governor. People will remember Jeb Bush appointing Catherine Harris back in 2000. Okay, this bill, if I'm reading this right, would now allow the Secretary of State, who is appointed by the governor, to provide, quote, direction and opinions to the county election supervisors, who are actually elected, people like you, Ion, and are they able to override the county the elected supervisor of elections?
Apparently, that is their whole goal, is to give an appointed partisan of the governor the ability to order the election professionals to do or not do certain things, as the case may be. And this is it boggles the mind to think that they think this is a proper behavior, particularly, say, for example, when the governor himself or herself is on the ballot and has the ability to order his minion to do whatever.
When he's on his own ballot,
right.
Yeah. Well, what will they? Do you know? Have any idea what they can and cannot tell you to do? Is this a situation like we're seeing up there in Michigan, where the governor is, passing this bill that allows them to essentially fire elected, city and county metropolitan elected officials?
Well, no, there was no staff analysis accompanying this bill. No, it's. The process is really devoid of what one would consider professional legislative process at this point. So we don't know to what they mean, because it's very vague. And this is how the process now works when you have complete one-party rule for, a decade and a half.
This bill would require voter registration groups such as the League of Women Voters to register with the state, file regular reports, and turn in completed voter registration forms within 48 hours.
And the forms themselves are extensive and burdensome, and this means that a student at one of my universities, before he could bring a voter registration form to check if people in his class are registered, he'd have to file a whole ream of bureaucratic paperwork. This from the government, the party that wants to deregulate their friends, but completely dominate with bureaucratic regulations that are completely unnecessary, the voting arena.
So why are they doing this, Ion? Is this just out and out trying to game the system in advance of 2012, something they weren't allowed to do, for the most part, at least under Charlie Crist?
Well, 2008 2010 elections were the best elections Florida has conducted in the last quarter century. And we really should not change the regulations. We took a lot of work in building the regulations to this point. There were a lot of lawsuits that went on. I certainly participated in many of them against the state. And basically, after 2006, I think our process works. But there's been a national effort coordinated through conservative groups in the country, for example, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a conservative-funded group from corporations, which basically sort of write model scripts for legislators around the country to adopt.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing 27 states right now are pushing language which these groups are essentially trying to suppress people's votes.
They are, and we're going to talk about more of that after this quick break with Ion Sancho, Leon County, Florida. That's the capital of Florida, if you don't know. Leon County, Florida, Supervisor of Elections, because now is the time to keep your eye on these matters. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Ion, stay with us. Much more straight ahead. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy tonight. We're speaking with Leon County, Florida, Supervisor of Elections, Ion Sancho, here on the night following the election in Wisconsin. Incredibly close, 1.5 million votes cast, a 204-vote margin at this hour with 100%. Of the votes counted, at least by electronic optical scanners. So we'll be talking about more of that in the show ahead, no doubt. Also joining us in the next hour, Eric Bollert of Media Matters on Glenn Beck being fired, quitting. Who knows? But he's leaving Fox News. At least he's leaving his daily show there. Okay, we're speaking with Ion about this huge new election law that they're trying to ram through now in Florida. Hundreds and hundreds of pages. It seems like it never stops. It seems like they do this every year, every other year. Ion Sancho, can they be stopped? This law with the that really will looks like it really will disenfranchise voters yet again in the state of Florida.
Well, and it really takes some really chutzpah to do what the Republicans here in the state of Florida are attempting to do, because, for example, provisional ballots are required in all elections now because of the flawed lists which were developed by the Secretary of State, which led to tens of thousands of proper citizens from being turned away at the polls, and there was no mechanism to provisionally accept a ballot to determine whether or not they were, in fact, ineligible citizens.
That was back in 2000.
That's
when
correct.
Thousands were turned
so
away.
So federal law requires that all elections have to have these fail-safe ballots,
right,
called provisional ballots.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the Republicans are essentially taking this concept of ensuring that you're not going to be disfranchising and make it into a tool of disenfranchisement by essentially saying that heretofore routine garden variety kinds of changes that a voter might make to their record, like changing their name or changing an address, if you do that when you come to vote, which has been our practice for almost 40 years in Florida, you now can only vote provisionally. Provisionally.
So to make sure people understand this, because I didn't, because all states don't work this way, but I came across it when I was covering Ann Coulter, who had committed voter fraud in the state of Florida. She was actually given the option when she went to vote, when they said, oh, no, that's not your address, that's okay, you can change it right here. She said, no thanks, and she ran out and she voted in a precinct where she didn't live. But the rule was, in Florida, you can tell them on the day of the election, I have moved, please change my voter record. But now, if you do that, you'll be given a provisional ballot, which may or may not get counted after
That's
the election,
correct.
Right?
And the more provisional ballots that you have, the more likely that mistakes are going to be made mm-hmm. and they can't be counted. And Florida also has a provision in which these provisional ballots must be counted within 2.5 days of the election. And if this rule would lead to about a 7-fold increase in the number of provisional ballots generated in the state, completely flooding all of the voting precincts and early voting centers with these kinds of provisional ballots now, which have to be developed, and the laborious, and people will be embarrassed, and you'll be taken out of line and not be allowed to vote in the normal manner as everyone else is. And so this is just ludicrous because, Brad, the state of Florida spent $28 million developing a state-of-the-art voter registration system. It's required by the Help America Vote Act, and that system was designed with the capability of doing an address change mm-hmm. while the voter's there to vote.
And then you're going to have 2 days to count all of those provisional ballots in a state where they already give you a ludicrous amount of time to count all the ballots, what, like 6 or 7 days? After the election. Okay, very quickly, Ion, I've only got about 30 seconds. How can they be stopped, or are they going to get away with it this time? Is there no way to stop them down in Florida from passing this bill?
Not from Florida, but fortunately, these changes change the election patterns in the state of Florida, which is covered by the Voting Rights Act, and the Justice Department will block these. They will not be allowed. And it's a good lesson in why there are two governments. One checks the other for tyranny. And we were able to block most of these onerous provisions by the Justice Department through the Voting Rights Act.
Because they have to be pre-approved by the Justice Department, and we have something close to a legitimate Justice Department in the Civil Rights Division again
now. That's correct,
yeah.
And they will ensure that these kind of provisions, which will have the impact and effect of burdening the voters, will not be allowed.
Ion Sancho, Leon County Supervisor of Elections, thank you, as always, for all that you do, my friend. I suspect we will talk soon. Good
Keep
luck, brother.
Good work.
Thank you, sir. Much more straight ahead on The Molloy Show. Truth Seekers, you've got the Mike Molloy Show right here, and you've got Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, drafted into duty. Once again tonight, be in the media while the Molloys are off on spring break. I'm here all week, and I'm glad you can join us. Please join us over at the bradblog.com chat room. Where we run a chat room over there every night live during while we're on the air live from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific time. So if you want to join us over there in the orangutan calls it the Bradosphere just now in the chat room, you can join us over there. We'd love to see you. You can also tweet us at the Brad Blog. That's who I am. Okay, we're going to talk more in a little bit about Wisconsin and D.C. Deadlock and everything else, anything else you want to talk about, you can get in line now if you want. 877-520-1150. Oh, and speaking of crazy, the debate today in the House and the Senate, I think, over the Republicans' attempt to keep the EPA from doing the job that they are mandated to do by Congress. Hopefully we'll be talking with Desi Doyen about that in a little bit as well. Okay, Richard Roper tweeted today, tonight, Glenn Beck to leave Fox News. Announcement causes immediate drastic fall in stock price of chalkboards, Hitler graphics, and bottled crazy. Well, joining us now is a man who knows a great deal about all of the above. He is a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. That's mediamatters.org. Eric Bullert, who gets the joy of following what Glenn Beck is up to day in and day out. Even now, as we learned today, that Glenn Beck and Fox News are parting ways, sort of. Hey, Eric, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. Whoop, do I have him on? There we go. Try that again. Welcome to the show, Eric.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going okay. You must be in a, are you in a good mood today, Eric, for some reason?
Yeah. Busy, and you never know what's going to land when you're monitoring the media. And this, obviously, you know, this had been talked about and foreshadowed, and really foreshadowed yesterday when Glenn Beck was on his radio show saying, now, if I leave Fox News, don't you let Media Matters take credit.
So he said that.
Yeah, he was preemptively trying to spin his quote unquote his transition.
Really?
In that case, I
want to give you and Media Matters credit for getting rid of Glenn Beck, Eric.
And you know, the talk has been in the air for a month or so. But if you go back 3, 4, 6 months ago, this was unthinkable. I mean, a year ago, he had 3 million viewers. He was a rocket star. He was challenging Bill O'Reilly for the largest audience at Fox News and all of cable news.
Mm-hmm.
And 12 months later, he gets his walking papers. It's pretty amazing.
Which is odd because they certainly went out of their way in the press release that Fox put out today, talking about how pleased they are with Glenn Beck, how he is still the number 3 program, a rated program, in cable news. So what's the real deal? If he's doing that well, why are they letting him go?
Yeah. I think, well, there's a few things. I think culturally, you know, he was a strange fit. He didn't come up in the Fox News family. He came in as a radio guy. He was rarely even over there. He had his own production and office down the street. He wasn't even in Fox News. There was grumblings in the press that Roger Ailes and others felt like he was hawking all his wares on the TV show and using the platform to stuff his pockets doing other things, which he clearly did. Sadly, Fox News did not appear to be embarrassed or feel like he ever went over any line. Even when he called, you know, the president a racist and suggested he had a deep-seated hatred for white people, Fox News never even condemned that. So it would have been nice, you know, if there was a flash of conscience and they said, okay, he's gone too far. But I think the main reason was money. You know, he's lost 300 or 400 advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the third best rated show in cable news, and they can't really make the money they should be making off of it. I mean, I'll just give you a tidbit. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, he went on vacation for a week. Judge Napolitano sat in.
Right.
He basically got the same ratings as Glenn Beck.
Did he?
So Fox News realizes they can stick someone else in there between Cavuto and Bret Baier. They're going to get 2 million viewers, give or take. And they're going to have someone who won't scare off 350 advertisers.
Well, maybe. I guess it depends who it is they end
That's
up putting
right.
in that slot. To be frank, who are any rumors in the
middle? Napolitano, I think. Eric Bolling, who they're clearly grooming over from Fox News Business.
Uh-huh.
He does the same shtick they all do. Maybe Megyn Kelly, although, you know, she claims she sort of does news during the day.
She does claim to do news, doesn't she?
And so if they took some of these familiar Fox faces, I almost guarantee you the ratings would be within 10 or 15%.
Really?
And so they could just continue on, and they could bring back, you know, some nationally recognized advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
Beck really does not have one. So I think that's probably what it's about.
There was, I think it was 400 advertisers who had pulled out in this campaign that was led largely, well, by two folks, colorofchange.org and Angelo Caruso, how do you say it, Carusone? Carusone?
Right.
Who is better known as Stop Beck on the Twitters and at StopBeck.com. I mean, he has been on a one-man rampage for the last year or two to Stop Beck. And actually, I talked to him earlier today, and everybody's trying to get him on to help him take his victory lap here, which I think he deserves.
Yeah.
He now works with you guys, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the beauty of sort of building, a progressive infrastructure and people like that. He did it all on his own. He wasn't a job. He felt like it was important. He was obsessed, and now he was able to find a home at Media Matters and continue what he was doing. What he has done is it's unprecedented, and the press hopefully will finally not just give him but the whole boycott effort its due. We have never seen, as far as I can tell, in the history of American television, a show that lost hundreds of advertisers. In the past, when we saw these sorts of initiatives, if people, especially folks on the left, were able to get 6-7 advertisers to pull off a show because of objectionable content, that was a really big deal. And then those 6 would just be back in 90 days.
Right, right.
The fact that it's in the hundreds and it's permanent, again, we've never seen anything like this, and it basically drove that show off the air.
Does that advertiser boycott also apply to his radio show, or is that a whole different ballgame?
Radio is much, much trickier. It's, TV, you just turn it on, you can tell who the advertisers are, you can track them, you can contact them. With radio, particularly, shows are syndicated on 300 or 400 stations, it's really hard to track all those ads on all those different stations. Some of the ads are local, some of them are national. It's easier for Beck to sort of hide in the radio world. Rush Limbaugh, that's why, it seems logical. Why don't people, contact Rush Limbaugh advertisers? Same thing. It is really complicated, and it's much more labor intensive. That doesn't mean it can't be done, but that's why it hasn't been done.
And as thrilled and as excited as I know that all you George Soros puppets are over there at Media Matters, the fact is, Glenn Beck, he's really not going anywhere, is he? I mean, he's still going to have his 3-hour radio show.
Yep.
And what's this talk of a Glenn Beck channel, which I think needs to be called GBTV?
That's right.
But is this for real? Is this going to happen?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, that was the spin his team was giving to the New York Times a couple weeks ago, I think, frankly, trying to save face, saying, well, we don't need Fox News either. We're going to run a new we're going to take over a cable channel. Look, he's a very ambitious guy. I'm sure he can find backers. But, I mean, Oprah Winfrey is finding how difficult it is to launch, your own cable channel.
Mm-hmm.
She's sort of this iconic, beloved figure.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Beck is sort of the textbook opposite of that.
Right.
He's having trouble getting advertisers for a 60-minute show, and now he wants to launch a 24/7 network.
Uh-huh.
It's got all sorts of troubles attached to it, I think.
And I suspect you guys will be watching. Okay, before I let you go, Eric, I'm going to give you one chance because I am a uniter, not a divider. I'm going to give you now the opportunity to say something nice about Glenn Beck, if you choose, because he also has an online, we'll call it a news site. What do you think of their coverage of James O'Keefe's latest scam?
Yeah.
You were wondering where I was going, weren't you?
I was going to say something nice about him, actually.
Okay, well, you can do that, too. But their coverage, The Blaze, I guess that's his site, of James O'Keefe's latest fake scandal, the NPR hoax that they pulled.
It was very interesting. I mean, it was Glenn Beck's site that took the time to really go through the raw, unedited video, look at the transcript, and point out that James O'Keefe was being James O'Keefe, and that everyone and anyone who accepted that initial edited video of the NPR sting, should be ashamed of themselves, and almost everyone had to raise their hand. So it was very interesting, and the dynamics are interesting. Why did Glenn Beck go after O'Keefe? Why did, the right-wing media is insanely disciplined and loyal to each other.
I mean,
we just don't see this sort of fractures break open. And then we had Fox News taking shots at Glenn Beck, I think via Drudge, talking about how his ratings were off and advertisers he was losing. So this whole Glenn Beck has clearly sort of stirred up a hornet's nest within the right-wing world. Some people, I think, might actually be happy to see him go. But they did a great job debunking yet again a James O'Keefe unethically edited
scam
thing.
Yeah, scam, yeah. Like, and, you know, and it's maddening because, you know, I worked very hard, as did you last year, trying to let people know.
12 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, trying to say, hey, and the whole reason I was doing it was to say, you know, if this happens in the future, don't be fooled, because here's what he did last time. And sure enough, everyone was fooled by the NPR scam. And incredibly, it took Glenn Beck's website to point out. Amazing. Amazing.
Very interesting chain of events, and it'll be interesting to see if that site does more of that. We haven't really seen any evidence that it wants to be, has this independent streak, but we'll see what, you know, unfolds.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see some watchdogs, some legitimate watchdogs on the right, you know, holding folks on the left, but doing it legitimately, not lying about it and everything. Hey, Eric, always great to talk to you, my friend. Really appreciate it. Keep up all the good work over there. Eric Bullert, senior fellow at Media Matters for America. That's mediamatters.org. Thank you, brother.
Talk to you soon.
All righty. Oh, man. Yeah. Glenn Beck's site was the one who schooled O'Keefe this time. All right, much more ahead. Brad, in from Malloy. Stay with us. Crazy. Ooh, me. Hey, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy. I speaking of crazy, I think Desi Doyen will be joining me in a little bit here to play some of the crazy that went on in the U.S. House and Senate today, as the Republicans are now trying to legislate away the mandates that the EPA has to, you know, to, like, keep pollution and stuff from killing us and the globe from warming and all of us dying. And their arguments of the climate denials, climate deniers on parade today was pretty extraordinary. And I think we'll have some clips from that. You can also get through to the show. Going to try to then leave the rest of the show wide open for you. 877-520-1150 is our number tonight. Don't call the Malloys. They're out having fun on spring break. Call us instead if you like. 877-520-1150. Get in line now. All right, we're just days away from the government shutting down. And it seems to me that's exactly what the Republicans now want. The Tea Party, such that there is one, a few hundred probably paid volunteers, fake demonstrators, have been outside in D.C., outside the Capitol, in their fake protests with their fake signs that say shut it down. And it looks like John Boehner is going to fall for it. Speaker Boehner on budget negotiations, he says to George Stephanopoulos in this exclusive tonight, he says, there is no daylight between the Tea Party and me. Well, there you go. Let's see, Stephanopoulos says none, and Boehner says none. What they want is they want us to cut spending. They want us to deal with this crushing debt that's going to crush the future for our kids and grandkids. There's no daylight there. And then he started crying and talking about job crushing and whatever, you know, it is that John Boehner does. They want to shut down this government. That much is clear. The fake Tea Party protesters who are out there holding up those signs, that's what they want. That's what the cover, the political cover that they're giving to John Boehner, who keeps saying, we don't want to shut down the government, but that's what Barack Obama wants to do. Okay. Yeah. Nobody believes you. You know, I think Des had plans to go to a national park with her family in a couple of weeks. That may be off if the government shuts down, while, of course, the Congress will get paid, as will Barack Obama. The U.S. Armed Forces, they won't if the government shuts down. Just some of the fun we have to look forward to in the days ahead. Brad, in for Malloy. Stay tuned. A whole lot more straight ahead.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange.
Tony, did you play that People Are Strange thing because Desi's on the air now? Is that why you? Is that? I think he's sending you a message.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, no, don't thank me. Thank him. He did it. I didn't do it.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he? You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike this week. Broadcasting live from Los Angeles all night long, all week long. Glad you could join us. We will get to your calls in a minute at 877-520-1150. If you're on the line, hang on. I promise we will try to get to everyone tonight. But before we do, because we were talking crazy in the last hour.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking Beck, Glenn Beck. And so it occurs to me, crazy, these people on the House floor today.
Oh, it was a
insane.
Crazy floor fight today. It was amazing.
All right, actually, let me introduce that. Desi Doyen. She, of course, produces our show here, but she's also my co-host and managing editor of the Green News Report, a nationally syndicated green news thing.
Green news feature that plays on lovely radio stations all around the country.
All around the country.
You can check out all of our archives at greennews.bradblog.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at Green News Report.
And if you don't get it on your progressive radio station, you should call them and ask them to add it. It's free. They can have it, and then you can hear us several times a week. You don't have to wait for Mike Malloy to leave town.
Talk about all that green news, energy, environment stuff that just almost never gets covered on the mainstream corporate media, except these days.
Yeah.
These days when we have all these natural disasters
It's funny when we do it. We need to make that clear because, a lot of people, they hear green news and then they think NPR and before you. So it's important to say it's what we call it, 6 minutes of, what do we call
of
it?
Of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And that's what I do, basically. Oh, okay. I'm the snarky. She comes in, she brings the news, and I just heckle her.
And that works pretty well.
That's the Green News Report. Well, says you.
We try.
All right. So what happened today, Desi Doyen, on the House floor and on the Senate floor?
Yeah, there's a huge, you may have heard that there's this huge GOP attack on the EPA. It's GOP v. EPA these days.
Right.
The Republican Party,
attacking,
of course,
Richard Nixon's EPA,
EPA,
that
no less.
Lefty.
Yes, and the Clean Air Act passed by, Republicans. Reagan actually was a big environmentalist and conservationist, and even George H.W. Bush, 41,
right.
The first one, also was instrumental in passing conservation laws, things. He was an oil man, but he was also somebody who cared a lot about the environment, enough at least on the Republican side to pass the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990, which were a very big deal, and also instrumental in negotiating treaties against acid rain and to save the ozone layer, both of which are successful global climate treaties.
Treaties, and they were actually cap and trade treaties as well.
Yes, acid rain and ozone were both cap and trade.
Back when Republicans used to like cap and trade, now they call it cap and tax because they think that's cute, but they were the ones who invented cap and trade and the idea of using, of capping the limit of carbon that big oil refineries and so forth
using
were able
to release.
Using
the free market purposes, basically,
a market-based
solution. Idea. It's a Republican idea, except the Republican Party has moved so far to the right that now Reagan is to the left of Obama.
Yep.
So right now, though, on the House floor today and on the Senate floor, they had a coordinated attack against the EPA to completely strip the Environmental Protection Agency of the authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, no, I was going to you can explain why they have that authority in the first place.
Well, they have the authority under the 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act. They are allowed, the EPA is allowed to draw regulations when scientific study shows that there is an endangerment to public health. It's called an endangerment finding, and they've used this on this particular authority under several different laws and you know, environmental issues that have come up. In 2007, the Supreme Court ruled, the conservative Supreme Court,
yes, the right-wing Supreme Court,
unanimously ruled in Massachusetts versus EPA that the EPA did have the authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. That was a big question. Are the states allowed to bring in additional regulation to regulate pollution, to regulate greenhouse gas emissions that scientists know now, without a doubt, is leading to global warming, dangerous climate change?
So the Supreme Court, the right-wing Supreme Court, ordered the EPA, founded by Richard Nixon, to use the...
Said, if you find in your scientific study that greenhouse gas emissions are a danger to human health, then you must regulate.
And told this to the Republican George Bush. And what he did was, when the EPA came in with exactly this endangerment finding from scientists,
right,
they sent it over to the White House.
They sent it via email, and they said, you know, this we have done the study, we have done all the scientific investigation, and we have determined, our scientists have determined, that indeed greenhouse gases do cause climate change and they are a danger to public health.
But George W. Bush White House didn't know that when they sent the email, because why?
They didn't open it.
They refused to open the email because they knew what was inside of it, and they knew that if they were told by the EPA that we've got this endangerment study showing that carbon needs to be in some fashion controlled, that it's leading to global warming, then they would have to do something about it. So the Bush administration simply did not open the email.
Simply ignored it.
Then Barack Obama came in, and he opened the email.
He opened the email, right. And of course, because it was a new administration, they had to go through the expense and the time of doing the endangerment finding all over again, which they did, according to the Supreme Court's ruling that required them to study the issue and come to a finding, which they did.
Couldn't they just use the Bush administration endangerment finding?
You know, I'm not exactly sure why they had to do it all over again, but it's my understanding that because it was a different administration, different administrators, they had to do it over again.
Okay.
So they did that.
Right.
EPA, endangerment finding, released it, said greenhouse gases, problem, emissions are a problem for human health.
And so now they have to, they are mandated to at this time, to take action to curb the gases, carbon.
Yes, and in the last 2 years, since the Bush Obama administration has begun, you know, last year we had the Waxman-Markey bill that did not get passed in the Senate, but it did get passed in the House. You know, it was an attempt to try to begin to put us on the path to moving away from fossil fuels. So it passed in the House, did not pass in the Senate, and it died there. The Obama administration and the EPA both said, listen, you know, if we don't do legislation in Congress, then the EPA is going to be forced by law to put these regulations in place. Either you guys do it or we're going to do it in the EPA, and you don't want that.
And yet, you hear the folks on the right, you hear the Republicans now, the climate change deniers out there saying that this is an unprecedented power grab by Barack Obama, his administration, and they're doing this power grab via the EPA, unprecedented, to implement a carbon tax to raise the price for everything. And so this is what they're now legislating. They're trying to pass a law to keep the EPA from doing their mandated job.
Yes, Fred Upton in the House, and James of Michigan, a Republican of Michigan in the House, and James Inhofe of Oklahoma, Senator James Inhofe, who famously said global warming is a hoax. He introduced a similar bill in the Senate that would strip the EPA of their legally required authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. It was a huge floor fight on C-SPAN today. We were switching back and forth between C-SPAN 1, C-SPAN 2 to hear all the crazy stuff.
They were both doing it. House and Senate
were simultaneously debating at the same time as President Obama was at Penn State doing a speech on how great clean energy can be. It was a crazy time.
And
so,
it can be. You reported, by the way, in the Green News Report this week that things like solar, the number one sector in the economy that is growing is solar energy.
Let's not pay attention to that because, of course, you know, that would be facts and stuff.
Yeah, facts and stuff. All right.
So this
are
clips from today's floor fight in both the House and the Senate over stripping the EPA of its authority.
It's a crazy mashup.
It's a crazy mashup.
CO2 is not a pollutant under the definitions of the Clean Air Act. It's not harmful to health. As I keep pointing out, as I speak, I create CO2.
We are looking at the possibility of the Environmental Protection Agency coming and regulating CO2. I will contend that they can do it if they have an endangerment finding, but they certainly don't have to do it. And the economic punishment to America would be tremendous. However, it wouldn't do any good.
I think it's a sad day that we're here talking about this today. It used to be that Republicans and Democrats could at the very least agree on clean air. We could at the very least agree on the fact that pollution was an issue in which we should address.
If we can begin to peel away the burden and the disaster that are the regulations that EPA is beginning to place on our country, then we will once again create an environment where the private sector can create jobs.
Where we can once again create
manufacturing jobs.
That's the holdup.
One of the interesting things about all three of these bills is everyone agrees that the EPA should not be regulating greenhouse gases. You know, if you're going to have a root canal, does it really help to wait 2 years?
What does it do? It basically says that Sir Isaac Newton, Albert Einstein, and Thomas Edison didn't know what they were talking about. Because this bill, in rather clear forms, caters to a narrow sector of a narrow political interest to ignore clear science. And there is no way you can get around this or sweet talk your way around this clear rejection of science. But one side of the aisle thinks that the Tea Party has greater scientific credibility, and that's who you're catering to.
We in Congress can certainly change the laws of this country, but last I heard, we cannot change the laws of nature. There is no serious disagreement on the science of climate change. In fact, the findings have been confirmed by all leading scientific academies around the world.
In 2010 alone, the EPA reported the reduction in fine particulate and ozone pollution from the Clean Air Act prevented more than 160,000 premature deaths, 130,000 heart attacks, 13 million lost workdays, and 1.7 million asthma attacks.
To me, that's a very dangerous directive, telling the EPA they can't act even though they know we're in danger. If there was a meteor hurtling towards us, I would hope that this body wouldn't pass a bill that tells NASA to ignore it, to step away from the telescope, specifically forbids them from telling people to get out of the way.
The U.S. Congress has entered the intellectual wilderness.
There's a deliberate misleading title to this bill to somehow allow cynically voters to believe that this is about taxes. And I think, and I had an amendment in the, before the Rules Committee that unfortunately was not accepted, how about we be intellectually honest about this? Let's rename the bill the Koch Brothers Appreciation Act of 2011.
Yeah.
That was it. So it's H.R. 910 is what's going on in the House
The Koch Brothers Appreciation Act is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. And so they're going to vote on this bill in the House. It will get passed in the House, will pass without a problem, will not get passed in the Senate. And in fact, they voted it down. The McConnell Amendment is what they were talking about using today. They voted that down. So it's not going to pass. The president is not going to sign it.
I love this. Carbon is good for you, so we shouldn't worry. Let's see. They can create jobs again if only the EPA will be told that they can't enforce these rules. That is the holdup for jobs.
Right. Somehow, all those jobs went to China and India over the last 15 years because of the EPA getting this designation in
2007. And there are a lot of jobs going to China and India for solar.
The jobs have already left.
I know, but they're going specifically for the renewable energy that we're so stupid we're not doing here in this country.
Yes, the United States has now fallen to third in the clean energy race behind China and Germany, and China is aggressively wooing away all of our clean energy, our homemade, American-grown clean energy industries.
We're number three.
Whee!
All right, Des. Way to go. By the way, good job taking all of those hours of House floor. I know. Of House and Senate, wrapping them up into 3 minutes for us.
Well, you know, that's about all it's worth.
Yeah, well, So this thing is going to go nowhere. It's just going to be more.
It's going to be more Sturm und Drang, and I'm
nothing moves anywhere.
That Obama won't sign it.
Nothing moves. Well, you never know with that guy. Nothing moves anywhere in this country ever. That's what we've gotten to at this point. It's crazy. Okay, your call straight ahead. 877-520-1150. Dez, thank you. Good job. All right, now get out there and answer the phone. All right. You're listening. That was Desi Doyen of Green News Report, greennews.bradblog.com. For more, as I say, your calls and anything you want to talk about, straight ahead, 877-520-1150.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small.
Science is real.
Science is real indeed. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike. So a little bit of breaking news here, and then we'll get to your calls. 877-520-1150. President Barack Obama just came out, said he's confident that government shutdown can be avoided. He was meeting with Speaker Boehner and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. He said it would be, quote, inexcusable, unquote, not to get a budget pact done. Quote, no reason why we should have a government shutdown. That's what he says. Harry Reid believes the same. He says, quote, hope lies eternal. And Speaker Boehner said, we had a productive conversation, made some progress, and we intend to work together to try to resolve this, but there is no deal. So that's where we are at this hour as they're pushing this to the last minute just to make it dramatical and fun. Yay. All right, let's get to your calls. 877-520-1150. Alvin, thank you, sir, for staying on hold for a long time. They really appreciate it. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hey, Alvin. You're on.
Let me call you right back.
What, Alvin?
I had to. It was another call.
All right. You wanna bring the other caller on?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you guys never go on hold a long time.
I know you were. I know. Thank you for that. So, what's on your mind now that you're on the air from Tuscaloosa, Alabama?
Yes. Okay. I got a beef with my liberal talk shows.
Yeah.
I'm a liberal, and I love progressive talk. I love progressive thinking people.
Yeah.
Why are you all so down on Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton is the best. I'm a black guy.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton is the best president I've ever lived through. I'm 54 years old.
Who's down on him? You're calling
Mike
me to blame
down on
him?
Well, you're hosting Mike's show. He's down on him. Randy Rose has turned on him.
Yeah.
I don't get it. The man, I look at Obama.
Yeah.
I'm a black guy now, a black liberal.
I understand.
Obama has no backbone.
Right.
He will not fight. He won't. And he keeps giving concessions. He starts from a position of weakness, and then he trades down from there.
Yes, he does. You're absolutely right.
What scares me.
Yeah.
As a black who really appreciates the fact that Bill Clinton had a very diverse cabinet, mm-hmm. and I even hear liberals saying that Obama has a very diverse cabinet. I don't see that.
Well, he does. But on that, I can't join you on that. He's got a diverse cabinet, but the
who's named him?
What?
For everyone you named that he has that's a color of any color other than just white, I'll name two that Bill Clinton had.
Okay, but what does all of this actually matter, Alvin? Bill Clinton better. That's fine. He's no longer president. What does this have to do with absolutely anything, really?
It, it has everything to do with anything. Obama will always be president, and I want some. I want us to get back on the path. We have somebody who will fight for some principles, for some democratic liberal. Well, we never have. We'll never get a liberal. But I want him. I want someone who will stand up and he will go toe to toe with Mitch McConnell, with John Boehner, and stand up for us.
Listen, Alvin. I hear you, brother. I'm all in favor of that. We need to push this guy to do that. I don't know that it has much to do with Bill Clinton either way, and I'm not down or up on Clinton. I'm just saying he ain't the president no more. Now it's Barack Obama. His feet need to be held to the fire. I'm with you there 100%, Alvin. Let's hold his feet to the fire. I do appreciate the call, and I appreciate you hanging on there so long. Anything you want to talk about, straight ahead, 877-520-1150. Questions about what's going on in Wisconsin with this recount that will be happening, 200 votes, let me know. Happy to answer it. Brad, in for Malloy. Yes, the fight continues in D.C. tonight, late night. Barack Obama just came out and made a statement that he's confident that they will find an agreement to stave off shutting down the federal government. What's he prepared to give away to get that? You can only wonder what's going on inside there right now. Obama, they continue to meet tonight. Obama and Speaker Boehner and Majority Leader Harry Reid, who is hopeful. Hope lies eternal, he says. And Boehner says it was a productive conversation, but no deal has yet been made, and they are still working all night long. Okie dokie then. Hey, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Your friendly, very friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around nice guy, if I say so myself. You can call us this hour. The phones are open. Anything you want to talk about, 877-520-1150. I know what I want to talk about. I got a few things to talk about, but you can stop me from doing so by calling the show at 877-520-1150. You can also reach us on the Twitters at the Brad Blog and at the chat room, which is now open for your chatting pleasure at bradblog.com. I had mentioned before the break that a shutdown, that while the president and members of Congress, their pay, they will be paid, even if the government shuts down. A lot of other people won't, including members of the military. And let's see, who is this? Jay Ramsaran on the Twitters asks me, he says, I have heard that military retirement and disability pay will not be impacted by the shutdown. True or false? I'm not sure about military retirement, actually, and disability pay. My understanding, though, is that members of the military will get all of their money eventually, but that their payments will be held up. At least that's what Paul over at West Wing Report was reporting on this morning out of the White House, and he has always been a very reliable source on these issues. As far as military retirement and disability pay, that's an issue, actually, that I am not sure about. If anybody knows, feel free to give us a call, 877-520-1150. That is our number. These are your public airwaves. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. So use them or lose them before you lose them more than you already have. By calling us, 877-520-1150. Paul Ryan's absurdly optimistic budget. Now, this isn't even for this year. This is for next year. This is this crazy, crazy budget that Paul Ryan in the House is putting forward that he says will cut the budget by $4 trillion. $1 million. And to support his plan, his scheme, which, by the way, will completely do away with Medicare, change it entirely to some private system of vouchers or something. Yeah, they're going to do away with that. No, that was just me gesturing, Tony. See, Tony was ready to go with me. No, it's just I'm just gesturing wildly. It will do away with Medicare as we know it, the very same Medicare that they were complaining the Democrats were trying to cut last year during the healthcare insurance reform fight. So these guys are having trouble keeping their story straight on the right, unfortunately. But part of this plan, what he did was the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, thought that Paul Ryan's budget would actually increase the debt and screw Medicare patients. But Paul Ryan didn't like those numbers, so he went to another respected nonpartisan think tank, the Heritage Foundation. and they said that Paul Ryan's budget here would bring $150 billion a year in new economic growth, and the tax revenues would rise even with the tax cuts that Paul Ryan is proposing get put in place. And most incredibly, the Heritage Foundation presumes that unemployment will be 2.8%. That's right. Now, of course, it's, you know, it normally the lowest it ever generally is, you know, 5 to 6% or so. That's considered maximum employment in general. But in order to make Paul Ryan's crazy, insane budget plans work, the Heritage Foundation says that by 2021, unemployment will hit 2.8%. And then, of course, with all those people working, there'll be a much bigger tax base and everything will be fine, right? Wrong. It's completely nuts. They're calling this budget Paul Ryan's unicorn budget. And Heritage even came in and said, after some widespread criticism, as TPM reports, that their analysis of Paul Ryan's budget was optimistic to the point of absurdity. An author of the Heritage Foundation is admitting to reporters that his numbers may have been a tad off. But he firmly lays the blame at the feet of the CBO. It's a Congressional Budget Office fault. The independent analyst that is actually tasked with evaluating the impact of congressional legislation on the budget for any of his errors. The most glaring number was Heritage's unemployment projection, which they saw dropping to 6.4% in 2012, and then an unprecedented 2.8% in 2021. In an interview with Slate's Dave Weigel, the director of the Heritage Foundation's Center for Data Analysis, William Beach, admitted his study's figures might strain belief. Quote, am I uncomfortable with a 2.8 unemployment rate? Asked Beach. It's pretty low. The model's predicting a low unemployment rate. That's how I take it. The thing is that the model stops in 2022, and if it had continued, then the unemployment rate would start to rise again or something like that. Yeah. So even the Heritage Foundation admits its numbers are absolute nonsense. That's next year's budget, though. We still got to get through this week and this year and the 7 months left this year, because that's what they're fighting about tonight, overnight at the White House, as unfortunately the Republicans seem to be playing their same damn dangerous game. Let's go to some calls here. Let's see. Nora in Minneapolis. Hey, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Nora.
Hi there, Brad.
Hi there.
Good to talk to you again.
Oh, good. And you.
Hey, I just want to say I'm sending out my unconditional love for Barack Obama.
Unconditional love?
And one day, well, there's a reason for that, partly because his mother died very shortly after my son died. That helps me plug into that spot.
Well, that's no way to, that's no measure for whether a politician is doing their job if their mother died.
I also envisioned Keith Ellison into office, don't you know?
You envisioned him into office?
Well, I read the paper in my corner coffee shop on the day that Martin Olof Sabo said that he's not going to run for office again, yeah. And I said, I want Keith Ellison to be my congressman,
well,
because he was such a great peace activist.
Well, that,
in our community,
yeah.
Minneapolis here, came. He was a Detroit homeboy, don't
right.
you know? He
all
came
right.
here for law school.
All right. And so you're giving your granting your unconditional love to Barack Obama. He can do no wrong.
I am saying one day a guy called in from Canada to an American talk show and he says, you people do not know how good you got it. He is so highly conscious for
yeah.
being the president of the United States. And even
okay.
to the point of nuclear power, when he says and goes along with these goons' plans,
yeah.
he always has his caveat.
Okay.
His caveat is if it can be proved to be safe.
Uh-huh.
Safe? Can you think anyone could ever?
Yeah, well, that's the same thing he said about drilling in the Gulf, but we're doing it again anyway, Nora, and it is still not safe.
Well,
and his
he's
own.
Not a dictator. Know
okay.
that.
All right. Well, yeah, that's setting the bar pretty low. He's not a dictator. Nora, I appreciate the call, though. Good to hear from you.
But we're really appreciating our beloved Governor Mark Dayton over here.
Well,
I
good.
Tell you what.
Yeah. Okay.
We feel so relieved after seeing what's going on over there in Wisconsin.
Next door, yeah, I know.
And right. Pawlenty showed us how to use a veto pen, and Mark Dayton knows how he's going to be able to use it. And our legislature went and put their budget out way earlier than
right.
usual because they know that they're going to have to all let
right.
it go.
All right, well
we have a Governor Mark Dayton.
Hang on to him. Take good care of him, Nora. I appreciate the call. Hang
Thanks
in there. All right. Let's go to Julius in my hometown of Missouri on I-44, driving along, hopefully hands-free talking. Hey, Julius, what's on your mind? Oh, Julius.
Yes, I'm here.
You are there. Yeah, are you driving at the same time you're talking?
Yeah, but I've actually got a speaker
okay.
phone here, so
good.
I can actually hear you on my car audio
all
thing
right.
and stuff. But, Brad, you know, I've been giving you some thought, actually, to all this stuff that's going on with politicians, them making a bunch of wrong decisions that we all disagree with and all this stuff. I actually want to ask you one question, if you can help me out with it.
All right.
All right.
Can you turn down your radio, sir?
I can, actually.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't we the people the ones who actually elect all these House of Representatives as well as senators into office?
Yes.
Well, then, why is it that the same people keep getting reelected if they keep doing the wrong things over and over again? Who in their right minds, after, let's say, one or two terms,
yeah.
see that, except for example, like that one caller before who called about Bill Clinton?
Right.
I mean, we were almost in a state of, we were not at war at all during the 90s, and I was in high school. I was in high school. I was in middle school.
Yeah.
I was in high school. Bill Clinton was elected one term, two terms
right.
throughout the whole 90s. And now, the same politicians that are still running, I'm now 30 years old, Brett.
Yeah.
I'm talking about when I was 10, 15, 20 years old. Here I am, 30 years old.
Yeah.
The same people are running the country, and it's getting worse.
All right.
So
well,
I don't get it.
All right. I'll explain it to you. I'll let you go, though, so you can drive safely, and you can take the answer off air. All right. Drive safe. You bet. Take care of my my home state there of Missouri, my beloved home state. Well, we don't have all the same people. Obviously, things have changed. But, yeah, we still have the Republicans and the Democrats, and it's a two-party duopoly. That's how they want it. That's how they keep it. And, you know, they keep out third parties. They trick you guys out there into believing that you're wasting your vote if you vote for a third party. Nonsense. You don't get a prize for picking the winner. I say that all the time. But it is big money. The big money is paying to keep those guys in. The huge corporations, they will pay the Republicans. They will pay the Democrats. They will pay whoever is in office. They will not pay the Green Party. They will not pay the Libertarian Party. They keep these guys in office. You want them out? Vote them out. Run yourself. Change the system. Stand up. Don't accept this crap over and over and over again. I'm not. I keep fighting. I don't accept anybody unconditionally. Brad Friedman, in from Malloy. More ahead.
made out of a human skull. Now come on, take a little walk with me, Arlene, and tell me, who do you love? Who do you love?
All right, welcome back to the Malloy Show. Brad in for Malloy. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. Love to hear from you. 877-520-1150. I've got some lines open here, and I'm going to try to keep the hour open for you to use your public airwaves. Your public airwaves. Gary in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Welcome to a lot of Minnesota folks. Hey, Gary, welcome to the Malloy Show. What's up?
Positive and negative things to say about both the president and Clinton. First of all, when Clinton came in, I was so happy to have him after 12 years of those jokers we had before him. And Reagan, to me, was a nightmare. He brainwashed my whole generation. The debate is still framed by the way he talked about government's no good and the rich don't have to pay their taxes. But people today, they don't remember a real liberal like Hubert Humphrey or Kennedy's or Walter Reuther was my father's hero of the union movement. And he was a socialist. He left the socialists in frustration and joined liberals like Humphrey and Proxmire and Symington, those good liberals we had in those days. In those days, they were fighting the boll weevils from the South who were called themselves Democrats but always voted with the Republicans. But I'm just saying that we have to support these Democrats no matter how much what they do that we don't like, because the Republicans, they got five fascist judges in there now, as far as I'm concerned. My vote didn't count in 2000.
Well, Gary, they do. I hear you. How do we hold their feet to the fire then? We just let them do anything? Because, you know, they do a whole lot of rolling over, don't they, if we don't hold their feet to the fire?
When Obama let them giveaways for those measly 39% taxes go by, I was so upset.
Yeah.
I was calling Ellison and Klobuchar and Franken's office, and I called the White House number, and they come and they beg me for donations. I'm just a retired working man, and I can't keep donating the money, and then they give those billionaires and millionaires all that. We're paying their taxes now. Working people and the poor are paying their taxes on property taxes and cost of education. Working people can't afford to educate.
I know. Well, I know that, but you say we need to support them at the same time, then you are calling and complaining anyway when they're rolling over and doing stuff you disagree with, right?
Because the Republicans are the most that party's got to go away. It's just a fascist party as far as I'm concerned. And the Democrats, the Blue Dogs, as far as that, I can't see supporting Ben Nelson or that new guy in West Virginia and that Baucus. I was so angry at him when he had those doctors and nurses.
No, I agree. Throw them out. So you're not 100% saying support every Democrat. You're saying support the ones that do us right, right?
I don't know. I'm just frustrated. See what happened.
You're not alone.
That was the first year I voted. I was at in the city here, and the students came in, and the McCarthy movement, and see, Humphrey would have ended that war. That's the way we felt, and we were scared of what's happened today, all this poverty, and Humphrey got kicked around a lot by Johnson. Johnson was a real liberal, but he was messed up on that Vietnam stuff.
I hear you, Gary. I got to get to a break. I hear you, and I know you're confused, and a lot of people are.
Johnson and McCarthy on that. He got blamed for that. He shouldn't have been, and he would have been a real liberal.
Gary, I got to go. I'm sorry. 877-520-1150. Gary, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. More of your calls straight ahead. That's in honor of the budget showdown going down tonight, overnight at the White House, where Boehner, Reid, and Obama are shooting it out. One can only wonder what Obama is preparing to give away. Stick to your guns there, boy. Yeah. Prosecutor, we were talking about Wisconsin earlier tonight. If you missed the first hour of our show, you can, I'll have it up late night at Brad Blog. If you don't have a Molloy subscription, podcast subscription, if you don't, you should. It helps support Progressive Radio, the voices of the truth out there that you don't hear on most of your public airwaves. So please do support him. But we talked about Wisconsin in our first hour, and we've got a somewhat detailed article at bradblog.com on this Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And I suspect we're going to be talking about it in the days ahead, maybe the weeks and the months ahead, because it's shaping up to look exactly like Wisconsin. Minnesota, the Senate race in Minnesota, with 204 votes currently separating, with all 100 precincts reporting and 1.5 million votes cast. Just 204 votes separate the current leader, Joanne Kloppenburg, who is not of the right, above Justice David Prosser, who is of the right, proudly so. Allies himself with Scott Walker and the Republicans there. And, of course, if Prosser were to win, if she were to be found the official winner, that would change the balance of the Supreme Court, which could change a whole lot. A whole lot in that state in the days and months and weeks ahead. So, Waukesha County, one of the very far right-wing county. That's where I'm reminded here tonight. That's where County Clerk Kathy Nicholas, she keeps all the results on her own personal computer in her office. That's it. On her computer, in her office, her personal PC. Do everything you can, if you're in Wisconsin, to get to your county headquarters, to find out what the procedures are, to watch what's going on, to participate in what's going on, to get as many eyeballs on the process as you can. And frankly, I don't care if you're on the left or the right. I don't care who you're rooting for. The more people overseeing this process, assuring checks and balances, the better. Because up till now, those numbers that I just reported to you are based on voting systems, voting machines that don't work. That, frankly, just often don't work at all. They can be easily manipulated. Most of the votes out there are on paper ballots. That's good. But as of now, they've all been counted only by easily hackable and often failed electronic optical scan machines. We need people here. We need eyeballs. We need hand counts. We need citizen oversight. If you want to have self-governance, if you're on the side of self-governance and the Constitution, then get out to the county and watch what's going on and be an observer of the process. That makes it a lot harder for the bad guys to pull off crap. It really does when they know that you're watching. And by the way, I've seen already coming out from the right, there's hints of voter fraud. Well, so far, I've seen absolutely nothing legitimate to back that up. The concern is not voter fraud. The voters are doing fine. It is the possibility of election fraud and election failure. And by the way, if I find any voter fraud, you bet I'll point it out. But I'm not going to imagine any. I'm not going to put forward this Fox News crap where voter fraud, they say, existed. I saw somebody say ballots were destroyed. BS. At least as of now. Got evidence? I'll join you in that fight. 877-520-1150. Let's go to Daryl in Denville, New Jersey. Welcome to the Mike Molloy Show, Daryl.
Hey.
Hey. What's going on?
Hey, listen, a couple of things. One, that Heritage, those Heritage Foundation numbers, 2.8% unemployment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
How could that be accurate?
Because everybody will be making about $4.75 an hour.
slave labor, full employment. As long as we don't pay anybody anything, okay.
Yeah. One other thing.
Yeah.
Look. I can understand. You know, people who are legit have a legitimate beef with this president. I can understand that. But I think what some of your callers may or may not understand, and it's really this simple. The Koch brothers have a lot of money, but your guy, Barack Obama, the guy you elected in 2008, he has pollsters.
Wait, the guy that, not, you don't mean the guy that I elected?
Well, I mean, the guy that, you know, the left and moderates elected, Barack Obama. I mean, the teabagger certainly didn't elect him.
Well,
Somebody did.
I didn't elect him. But all right, go ahead. Whoever the, you know, whoever voted for him, right?
Well, I mean, if you vote,
yeah,
then he's paying attention. If you don't vote, he has pollsters. They know how to to put together a message to appeal to the voters who are likely to support him. And if the left doesn't support him, and if centrist and center right people do, that's where his policy is going. That's how they're going to fashion their policy. It's as really as simple as that. And so, I can understand the disappointment. But you know, if you don't go out and vote. You know, he didn't say.
I'm not suggesting anybody don't go out and vote. Where did you, who's saying don't vote? I mean, these are voters who are complaining about Barack Obama. These aren't people saying I'm not going to vote. These are legitimate complaints.
No, that's not what I meant.
Okay,
I meant in 2010.
Right.
Right. I mean, there is a legislative agenda.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what that legislative agenda is.
Right.
If you didn't go out and vote in 2010,
right,
and so those people who stayed at home, don't sit around and complain about what the president gives in on or what Harry Reid negotiates on, because if you didn't get out and vote, you helped lose the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
This is what you get, and I mean.
Well, but you know what, though, Daryl, I hear what you're saying, and I agree. That said, it's been a very disappointing 2 years. You can't just presume that people are going to show up because you've got a D by your name, you know, after you've rolled over on one thing after the next, needlessly, after you've broken promises. Nobody's perfect. No president is perfect, and he is obviously dealing with an unprecedented bunch of loons who want to destroy him on the right. No question about that. But there are things that he has rolled over on that he did not need to roll over on. And, you know, that does not inspire people to get out and vote for you.
You know, Brad, I feel you.
All right.
You know, the people who stayed at home in 2010, their beef is with Obama from 2008 to 2010.
Right.
If you stayed at home in 2010, then the person that you need to blame is not. I mean, you can not Barack Obama.
Well.
2008, 2010 was on him. 2010 going forward,
That's
on us.
Well, that's right, and I suspect people will be doing something about that in 2012, but we'll see. Daryl, I appreciate your call, brother. Take
okay,
care.
Man.
All right.
Yep.
The problem is, you know, to say that, you can't take it out on them. We have been hearing this for years. You know, Nancy Pelosi and those guys, they took impeachment off the table during Bush. Why? Because we need to get control of the House in 2006. And then, we can't impeach now because we need to get control of the White House in 2008. And, we can't do too much because we don't want to lose the White House in 2012. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. Who will simply stand up and fight for what we believe in, fight for progressive values, fight for the Constitution, fight for the rule of law, fight for putting war criminals in jail? Who? I think America is waiting for that person, whoever that is. They thought it was going to be Barack Obama. Now, if they thought that, it's because they weren't paying attention. You can go back to, 2007. We were writing articles at Brad Blog showing that this guy is the worst negotiator in the world. So, if you're surprised by Barack Obama, it's largely because you weren't paying attention or you were just being hopeful. I mean, Lord knows, anybody would have been better than McCain at that point. And frankly, the Bush administration so destroyed the Republican brand that a ham sandwich could have run with a, D next to its name in 2008. And I believe that it would have won. But that's not going to get you there. You got to stand up and you got to fight. And I guess this country, the Patriots out there are still looking for that fighter somewhere. Let's go 877-520-1150. Sanchez in Montebello, California. Welcome to. Oh, and by the way, it's Waukesha apparently, not Waukesha. Wisconsin earlier. My apologies to the good folks of Waukesha. Now get in there and watch what your county clerk is doing, because I don't trust her as far as I could throw her. Hey, Sanchez, what's on your mind?
Senor Friedman, first let me comment on something that you just said right now about the person that we are waiting for. Now, many of these progressive talk show hosts keep saying, well, it's got to be a Democrat. Well, what if the person that we're waiting for comes from a third party? Automatically, all of you guys are ready to dismiss him because
he's
from a
third party. Again, you guys. What do you mean, you guys? Well, I'm not ready to dismiss him.
Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman.
Well, I'm not going to take credit for what they did. I am, by the way. We are broadcasting from Stephanie's studio.
Yeah,
I'm sitting in her chair here. But
and I've actually gotten to touch her box,
but,
too.
I'll just let that go. Yeah. But I am not Stephanie Miller. And,
okay.
I did not vote for Barack Obama.
Neither did I.
So there
I
you
voted
go.
For Ralph Nader. But this is the thing that I get tired of hearing from a lot of different people. It's like, we all have to gather under the banner of, the Democratic Party and hold Barack Obama's feet to the fire. You know what? Progressives have been holding Barack Obama's feet to the fire so long, his feet look like barbecue right now, which probably explains why he couldn't put on a pair of comfortable shoes and go out and support and walk with the workers in Wisconsin. We're tired. Real, truly, honest to God, progressives are tired of supporting this man and fighting on a team where the coach of the team automatically gives 50 points to the other side. We're completely discouraged, and if that man comes from a third party, well, damn it, I'm going to vote for that man. But the real reason that I called was to remind the gentleman, I think he was from Georgia, the one that was wondering, he didn't understand why everybody's so down on Bill Clinton. Part of the reasons that we are experiencing the problems that we have right now is because of old Bubba Clinton. Remember, for example, he signed into law. Yes, I know Phil Graham was the one that pushed it through Congress, but he was the one that signed the elimination of the Glass-Steagall Act.
Yep.
If you might remember,
I do.
He also signed
the Telecommunications Act, which has helped ensure that it's almost impossible for progressives to get on our public airwaves anyway. Oh, yeah.
Which is why we have Rush Windbag on 20 million stations across
yep.
the country.
Yep.
And the third thing that old Bubba Clinton did was, shall I say, Monica Lewinsky. If old Bubba would have kept it in his pants, then Al Gore would have probably have won that presidential election.
Yeah, but that's stupid. That was all Republicans. I'm with you on the other ones, but I don't care what he keeps in his pants.
I did not have sex.
Of
with
course
that woman.
He did. What's he going to do? Because it's none of our goddamn business who he's having sex with.
But then all of the moral majority came and
all
they
right.
took all of the gullible voters away, all of those swing voters, and they went to the Bush side. I mean, see again,
Senor Sanchez, I got to get I got to get to a break. Adios,
gracias,
brother.
Senor.
All right, keep up the keep making noise out there. I do appreciate it. 877-520-1150. Last chance.
The beauty parlor is filled with sailors. The circus is in.
Remember this, a kiss is still a kiss, a sigh is just a sigh, the fundamental things apply as time goes by.
My thanks tonight to engineer Tony Sorrentino here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. Thank you, sir. Of course, to producer and chat room hostess tonight, Desi Doyen, and call screener, Desi Doyen, thank you. I hope Forth is okay. She didn't make it by the chat room tonight. Hopefully, she'll be with us tomorrow. My thanks to my guests tonight, Ion Sancho and of Florida, and Eric Bullard of Media Matters. We will, of course, be back with you tomorrow. We'll try to get in a few more calls here, 877-520-1150. If you're listening tonight via MikeMalloy.com, please stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid. And as usual, my great big thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to sit in and completely ruin their show. 877-520-1150. Let's fly through as many as we can here. Try to get everybody on your public airwaves. Where are we here? Becky in Northern California. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Becky?
Hi. Thanks for having me. You know,
thanks for being had.
I was listening to the comments of the previous caller about Clinton's sins. And he didn't mention Clinton, the worst thing Clinton could have done for the country, which was to sign NAFTA into law.
Yeah.
Driving down wages.
Yep.
Losing jobs.
I hear you. I hear you. But what is this Clinton? I didn't even bring up Clinton. And everybody, it's like the 1990s in here. We're looking at a government shutdown going on tonight. So everybody must have Clinton on their mind or something. The last time we had a government shutdown, 1995. Yeah, there's all kinds of things that Clinton was no good at. But now we're talking about the new guy and the things that he's no good at. But no, I hear you. Thanks, Becky. Bye. I appreciate the call. Okay, let's 877-520-1150. Last chance. Get in if you want. David in Bakersfield, California. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, David.
Hello. How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Not bad.
Good.
I've been listening to your show.
Yeah.
And I can't really disagree with anything I've heard about people, you know, griping about Clinton or Obama. But
right.
In my opinion, you know, while they can be down on them a little bit, they better support that side to some degree, because at least they'll throw you a bone. And if the other side gets the hammer, the working class is done.
You know what? Of course, I hear you. The folks on the right now, the folks who have hijacked the Republican Party, are madder than hatters. They are loons. They are crazy. They are nuts, and they're taking advantage of a lot of great Americans who they have convinced into believing that they are something that they are not. But you know what? It's interesting. Now that the Republicans are in power in so many places, in Congress, in Wisconsin, in Florida, in Ohio, where they have these governorships, their approval ratings are plummeting. I think Americans are finally seeing what these lunatics are up to, what they are trying to do. And it has nothing to do with the Constitution. It has nothing to do with saving money. It has nothing to do with being conservative. It has only to do with paying off their corporate friends, period. And maybe sometimes, some Democrats have to lose the election for the working people of this nation, for all of the people of this nation to wake up and see what these scoundrels and vagabonds are up to.
I agree with you there.
All right. David,
It's just, it'd be a shame if, you know, the economy and the working class are beat down to a point now where nobody really has the reserves to let these rascals get back in the driver's seat completely for another 8, 10, or 12 years.
I bet people are paying attention and they're taking notice. Thanks, David. I appreciate the call. And they voted like that yesterday in Wisconsin. If those computer-reported numbers are correct, they're paying attention. Frank, I got 30 seconds for you up there in San Jose. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, you mentioned about Clinton signing the law to overrule the eliminated Glass-Steagall Act.
Yeah.
I think, and I explained it wrong to Jesse, it's not that there was a majority against him. I think there was a majority of both houses against him, both the House of Representatives.
If you're talking about Glass-Steagall, it was something that they wanted. They were like, well, let's do away with these regulations, and they bought into that, doing away with regulations is somehow going to improve the economy, and that is what has led us to the economic disaster we faced last year, 2 years ago. Thanks for the call, Frank. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. We'll be back tomorrow night, right here on The Malloy Show. Until then, I'll see you at bradblog.com. Keep it lit.